All right, we've had a fun show so far. It is Friday. You've made it to the weekend. It's been a crazy weather day, as Waddle has observed all day. It was just checking in with the wife,
too.
Do
you find your mood is affected in some way, shape, or form by the weather?
Yeah, oh, very much so. Yeah.
But I find that more now than ever.
But now that the temperature is sort of...
climbing?
Yes. Now that it's above 40, and now that it's into the 60s, in spring, it's going to rain. So, like, yes, and it's been sunny for the last few days. I'm okay with a little bit of rain as long as the temperatures here stay in the 60s. And then this weekend, like you said, it's supposed to be 80 on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I can handle like that. What I didn't like is those days that it's like 40 or the snow that we
sucks.
Got. That's when it's the worst in April. I can handle these days. I was talking to my wife, too, because Broxton had some football, was supposed to play some flag football.
He's got flag football this time of the year?
Yeah, like this is like they should play flag football year round.
I love that.
Yeah.
They're playing indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors now. And that's what's tough is the fields are always muddy. It's raining, and I was checking in to see what
positions he playing.
Well, they all play basically receiver. Sometimes they'll play quarterback. A lot of them are safeties, you know, because there's no one's rushing the passer. So they're all covering guys, and you're either covering a guy or you're playing a safety position.
Okay.
It's fun.
What does he enjoy most?
He likes playing safety.
Ooh.
He likes getting picks. He likes freelancing. And we're working on our hands.
Talk a little trash?
No. Okay. No. He's not
going to. Talk smack.
No, don't talk smack.
Talk smack.
Don't. We're trying to teach good sportsmanship. Don't you dare. We don't talk smack.
Raising a young Adam Archuleta in the box safety.
Yeah. No. Adam Archuleta on the Rams, maybe, not the Bears. All right, Adam Archuleta sucked on the Bears.
Something tells me Braxton celebrates when things go well.
He loves life.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Braxy just loves life.
Yeah.
So don't
try to hold him down.
No, but the sportsmanship is something that they like. There's a lot of kids who need a good lesson with sportsmanship. It's something they try to teach the kids. And I don't want him goofing off and taunting.
There's a time and place for that. Maybe later when he's older.
You know what? You've been the guy for 17 years who's told me to act like you've been there. And now I have kids. And now you're telling my kids to taunt. What is that?
It's a mix. We call that a mixed message. That's what we call that. A mixed message.
Act like you've been there. Act like you've been there. Yes. Act like you've been there.
Do what I say, not what I do.
All of a sudden, I have a 10... How old are my kids? 9 and 8. They're 9, soon to be 10. 9 and 8 year old, and you're telling them to taunt. I don't like
that.
It's
my bad.
I don't appreciate that.
You know what? I feel bad. I feel some shame right
now.
Yeah,
I'm glad you do.
Spike that ball.
You deserve it. Spiking the ball is different than taunting. They should celebrate.
Spiking the ball is a celebration at that age could be considered a taunt.
You know what they do? They're learning from the NBA players where...
Too small?
They do the too small.
That is... Listen, like that to me, for the young kids, is more of a taunt than anything.
They do. They all do it.
Yeah.
They all do too small. I'm like, don't do too small. Because we're small.
What does that mean? Too small.
I'm like, Mace, we're small. The Silverman's small.
Give him the too big.
We should be doing the too small.
Too big. Too big to catch me.
Let's bring in Jesse. Jesse knows how my kids are, too. If anyone knows how my kids are, it's Jesse Rogers, who joins us right now on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. You know, right?
Oh, I know your kids as well as anyone at that station, and I can definitively say Braxton is not going to act like he's been there before. No way. No way. I mean, he won't get a trash talking penalty, but a taunting, like celebratory kind of penalty, that's a possibility.
My bet is his bat flip is epic for a kid his age.
Yes. Yes. Mason's a little bit more reserved. I think Mason's the handshaker, where Braxton's more of the guy that's going to snub a guy down the handshake line. Sorry, Sylvie.
Yeah, yeah.
Mason may be more likely to have his mouth washed out with soap.
Yes, his language has not been good lately. We've
got to turn around and look at the umpire and say something that you never thought would come out of his mouth.
Yeah, fourth, fifth. He's in fourth grade now, and you know how it is when you're a fourth, fifth grader.
Hear.
Yeah, Yeah, not at home. Jesse is brought to you by your local Chicagoland Toyota dealers. Toyota, let's go places. All right, so where are the Cubs going right now with starting pitching and their bullpen?
Survival mode, I think, a little bit, being on the road and being down Taillon, being down Steele, and having a bad Hendricks right now. I think it's a bit of a survival mode. I think they did get a boost having Ben Brown pitch the way he did in his first career start. They're going to have to stretch him out a little bit more. Keegan Thompson is coming up for Jose Quas. Remember, Keegan Thompson kind of had a flash in the pan and really was a flash in the pan that really struggled. But it kind of shows you they don't really have a lot of reserves ready just now. I think they will in a month or two down in the minors. It does kind of underline the fact that Jed only went out and got Hector Neris really from the outside of any importance. But they're a little bit thin. I think they're a little bit of survival mode as they figure out Hendricks, as they get Steele back from injury especially. And then, you know, Taillon's now at AAA, so he's about a start or two away. So I think it's going to look a little messy for a little bit here, especially during this road trip.
Jess, I don't want to beat the dead horse, but I shall. Isn't this just another example of why having more starting pitching versus less starting pitching would be the case and why they should have maybe signed somebody?
Absolutely. There was a guy there that was unhappy with his agent, right? Apparently, Montgomery fired Scott Boras yesterday. There was a deal to be had there. There's no doubt about it. There was a deal to be had. He ends up signing for 1 year. And I think I said this to you guys. Like, when did the Diamondbacks become the George Steinbrenner Yankees, right? I mean, you lost a pitcher like that to the Diamondbacks. So they're already dipping into their depth with Assad in the rotation now. Wicks obviously was going to be there. But they don't have much more to burn until some guys are ready down in the minors. And you just have to hope Hendricks turns it around. But getting Steele back in a couple weeks will be huge, obviously, Tommy. But they seemed a little thin in the first place, and now they feel really thin. When things are going well at home and you're playing the right opponent, it's great. But these are the moments that it gets tough. West Coast, good teams, it can speed up on you, and all of a sudden they do look a little short on their pitching staff.
I don't know if it's the loud minority or if a lot of Cubs fans feel this way, especially when it's not even April 15th yet. But I've seen a lot of Cubs fans post that it's time to cut bait with Kyle Hendricks. And to me, it's way too early to think that. Because, like you said, you're very shorthanded already at this point. He's been a notorious slow starter. And I'm not saying this is just another slow start, as you said. He's concerned about what he's seeing. You should be concerned about what you're seeing from him. I'm not telling anyone they shouldn't be concerned. But to just say it's time to just give up and to cut bait, especially what he's owed the rest of the year, you've got to try to fix him at this point. And you got to take this a little further down the road, don't you?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. Let me address a couple things. I think you made a great observation about how fans are reacting. I saw the same thing, at least social media-wise. The other night when he pitched poorly, I posted a negative stat, obviously. 17 earned runs in three games is the second most from a Cubs starter ever in the first three games of a season. So it's definitely bad, there's no doubt. But I posted that, and I actually thought I'd hear back from a lot of Cubs fans saying, Jesse, you're being negative. This is Kyle Hendricks. This is the World Series hero. I did not see that in my timeline. I saw a lot of what you're talking about, this knee jerk, he's done, we've given him a chance to figure. No, you haven't. He had a 3.74 ERA last year, coming back from an injury. That's pretty good. And this is three starts in a month that is traditionally his worst by far. April is by far his worst month. Now, this is the worst April he's ever had, but still, May is like a 2.90 ERA. If this continues into May, I'm talking about career-wise, this continues into May and maybe even into June, different story. Nobody makes conclusions after three starts. I don't care how bad or how good you are. No teams make conclusions after three starts. Maybe it'd be different if he's 42 years old or something, right? He's getting older, there's no doubt, but he's not done necessarily. So, yes, the short answer is you have to give him more time. It is concerning that he can't even figure it out. He's talking to Yan Gomes now. He's going to get Tommy Hotovy more involved. He was such a guy that knew himself so well that he could usually fix it, but it looks like he's going to look for some outside help. So let's just see, at least the month of April, maybe even a few starts into May.
What do you think is ailing him right now? Why isn't he more effective? No one is expecting him to be dominant, Jess, but why isn't he more effective?
Yeah, it's more that I can tell you what's happening. I can't necessarily tell you why. His bread and butter pitches, just the two of them, sinker and changeup, are just not fooling anyone. So it's pitch placement, really. Like, he's never been a guy that's going to have eight pitches like Darvish, right? It's always going to be the sinker and the changeup. So just to give you an example, the changeup especially, hitters last year, it wasn't like his best year, but against his changeup, hitters hit 180. This year, they're hitting 320 off of that pitch. Now, they're hitting 500 off his sinker. So that's a whole other thing. But the changeup's been his bread and butter. So I think, you know, maybe he's being a little predictable. I'm not saying tipping pitches, but even mentioned sort of sequencing. He might be a little predictable so far, but also just not putting those pitches in the best place and simply put making more mistakes with them than he's ever made in the past. Because when he makes mistakes, they get hit, let's face it. But most games, it's two mistakes. Lately, it's, you know, these first three starts, it's 6-7 mistakes or whatever the case may be. So I can tell you what's happening. I don't know exactly why.
The Trevor Bauer elephant in the room, Jesse, because he's been brought up by some Cubs fans. What about Trevor Bauer? No one wants to sign him. He was exonerated by the law. He has served his suspension. Is he not being signed, A, because people think he's a bad dude and because of what he did to that woman, or B, because he's a bad teammate, or C, because he was the guy who blew the cover off of the spinning the baseball and ratted out some of his other pitchers, or a combo of all three?
I think it's more number one, just that his history, not just with that woman in particular, because in some ways he was exonerated, but he did have to serve a long suspension. That was still done by a neutral third party. So he was certainly guilty of something, but he was exonerated legally. I think it's that. I think it's a shady past. I think maybe his age a little bit, though. You know, he does have some good stuff, it seems like, just watching him from afar. So I think it's that. I mean, I was thinking about this separately. Like, Mike Clevenger was out there forever. Think about Mike Clevenger re-signing with the Sox. He's the ace. Now, Crochet could be that guy. It's two starts, though. You know, Clevenger, by all means, history-wise, he's like the ace. So why wasn't Mike Clevenger signed? He was completely exonerated of things last year, 100% exonerated. We haven't talked about this, but I dove into this when they re-signed him. And he has a protection order against this woman for 15 years. He won that, so he wasn't signed. So if teams shied away from him and he hasn't been suspended or anything, what do you think they're going to do with a guy like Trevor Bauer? So I'm not surprised the Cubs are staying away. Within baseball, everybody that thought he might get signed thought it would be with a smaller market team, sort of, you know, a Miami or something, you know, somewhere people weren't paying attention. The idea of him signing with the Cubs, I don't think they want that potential headache.
Jess, on a positive note, how good is the story of Christopher Morel? And can you make a case for his improvement as something that will be significant throughout the course of this year? And there maybe won't be as many up and down moments as there have been in his first two seasons.
Yes, you can make that case because already you're seeing more plate discipline. Now, that can go in waves. So, like, he could get cocky or something and then go through a month where he's swinging at everything. But so far, so good. He's coachable. Everything you see about him, you guys talked to him on the air, everything you see about him is real. What he is on the field is what he is off the field. He's coachable. He's likable. He understands his weaknesses. He's got a lot of natural talent. I don't think the Cubs want to curb that at all. It's kind of like with Javi back in the day. They don't want to take any of that enthusiasm away. Just want him to fix the strike zone a little bit. Javi never really did. But Morel, in a short period here, is getting better at it. Now, he's not going to be one-to-one walks to strikeouts or even close to it, but just what we're seeing so far really bodes well, even getting better in the field. He's just this good guy you want around the team and has that high ceiling along with Suzuki. It's a great story. It's a great story.
Jess, this is maybe an odd question, but he's always been listed. I'm going to ask someone that maybe can answer the question. He's always been listed everywhere I've ever looked at 5'11 and 145 pounds. He's not 145 pounds. How big is he?
No, he's definitely not 145 pounds.
Everywhere you look, he's listed on ESPN, on Baseball Reference. I keep looking at it because I want to know how big he is because he swings a mighty stick. How big is he?
I don't know exactly, but I will just give you a reference point. I played football in high school, and I was 145. Me.
Right.
Me.
That's my point.
How you're citing yourself.
How big is he? Is he 6 foot tall?
Yes, I think he's 6 foot tall, and I think he's got to be 175. Yeah, he's got to be, I mean, at least 175 or 80, definitely.
But I know it's a weird question, but everywhere looked, he's been listed as 145. He blew away in the wind at 145.
Yeah, he's stronger than that, and he is bigger than that. But not bulky. He's certainly not bulky, so I get why, you know, whatever. You know, you look at him and you think, okay, well, he's not 200, you know, but he's I think he's in good shape. Like, so, yeah, those sites are wrong. He's got to be 175 or more for sure. So
it's a lot of power, even for 175 pounds. He's got a lot of power for that.
Yeah, he's just got a big swing, and I just love his pitch selection right now. He hits almost everything hard, and he's laying off some borderline pitches. It's just a really good start, and actually probably surprised that he's come this far this fast. In some ways, free swingers take time. Again, look at Javi, right? So they take time for sure. It's a great storyline, just as Suzuki is.
Jesse, on the other side of town, unless you have anything else on the Cubs, do you have anything else that you need to relay?
No, let's hit the south side. I'm here now and get
started. Oh, you're there now. Good.
Yeah.
Good. And
where
then
you
can read. Well, after you answer this, you could relay some info. But I've heard a lot of people say, well, what were you expecting? I certainly wasn't expecting this before, as Carmen put it, tax day, where they're three veteran players who are proven to be out. Like, you could not have diagrammed it any worse than it's gone so far, correct?
No, I guess not. I mean, it's funny. I wrote a White Sox like recap yesterday for ESPN.com, and what I wrote was, the surprise is the pitching staff's been okay. I mean, using Crochet or Kopech, you know, you can find some positives where the offense has been pretty brutal other than, you know, a game or two here and there. But when you add the injuries to this brand-new pitching staff, it is even worse. But, again, I've mentioned this on day one. When you turn over your pitching staff like they did, when you have two brand-new catchers, both hit under 200 last year, by the way. I mean, what did we expect? I mean, I expected 100 losses. It could be closer to 110 or 120 for all we know. But I guess it's not that big of a difference than I thought. I just thought they'd hit a little bit more and maybe healthy until Tuesday, you know. But again, we're not shocked at those injuries either, because they happen all the time with those three players. So it's just a little bit more than I thought, not that much more.
Did Getz get any questions about them retooling the way they train, the way they do, you know, the health and fitness and strength and conditioning? Because I don't think there's another team that can't stay healthy in those guys like this. It's super embarrassing.
It is. It is. And there isn't another team that has this. In fact, he tried to wave it off a little bit. He said, well, other teams have elbow issues that we don't have right now. Right. I mean, just a little bit he did that. But here's the thing, and I didn't get really a chance to follow up with him. Because, look, they did turn over their training staff. They did turn over their training methods under Rick Hahn. And so when Chris Getz was asked, have you examined this? Especially with these three, he basically repeated what Hod said 5 years ago. We need to dive into that more. We need to dive into that. And then he pivoted to, it's my job to have depth to cover those injuries. Well, of course it's your job, but this team's not going to have that depth to cover Luis Robert and the ceilings, at least, that Eloy and Moncada have. So the idea that he would cover three key players, that we don't care. We don't care. You're not going to get that kind of depth. But we do care about why this is happening. And for him to say we need to dive into this, it's what Rick Hahn said 4 years ago. So, but we didn't get a good answer, and I didn't get a chance to follow up there. So he did say Moncada could be back in 3 months. So apparently he's been upgraded to after the All-Star break. But I'm sure you guys feel this way. Any of these guys that come back, when they come back, the clock just starts ticking on the next injury. It just does. So, okay, Moncada's back by the All-Star break. I suppose there's a one in a million chance he comes back before the trade deadline, is on fire for 2 weeks, and they get to trade him, but I highly doubt that'll happen.
What do you believe is the truth about the way they feel about Pedro Grifol?
Oh, I think his days are numbered. I don't think there's any doubt. I said this on the air after the Joe Cowley thing in the Sun-Times, that it's really an open secret in baseball that Grifol isn't going to last his contract. I figured he'd last this year because eating 1 year, as much as Jerry doesn't like to do that, he might do it. But I think he'll probably last the year. Let's face it. I think he'll probably last the year because what's the difference? The one little thing would be if Getz thinks, okay, we're going to call up AAA guys. I want to bring someone new in a new culture. Like, you know, I don't know. Meaning midseason. But I highly doubt it. I think he'll be gone after this season from all the indications I get. But that isn't any source material. That's just a feeling out there in baseball.
Jess, if in fact, for whatever reason, they would decide to part ways with him midseason, do you believe there is a chance that Tony could come back and finish the year as the White Sox skipper?
If Tony is healthy, the answer to that question is yes, there's a chance. If Tony is healthy, what I know about Jerry is he will not change his stance on this team was at its best when Tony La Russa was the manager over these last 4 or 5 years. That during that 1 to 2 year period, because at least they went 500 in that second year, they didn't lose 101 games. Like his worst year was 500, his best year was the playoffs. So I would say if Tony was healthy enough, Jerry would push for it midseason. But I do think that Grifol is going to last the year, barring, of course, something crazy happens. And I don't think that crazy thing's going to happen because the crazy thing was last year. The culture dysfunction was last year, and somehow he survived that.
Yeah.
So he's going to survive this, which is less about culture and just that Chris Getz didn't give him much of a team.
I just don't understand that the eating of the money. Like Waddle and I were trying to determine how much does Pedro Grifol make?
Maybe $1 million, $1.5 million, maybe.
Oh yeah, I told you I read the article. I think it was Nightingale's article from last year that said, I believe there's like 6 guys in baseball, or there were last year, that managers that make less than $1 million, and there's a handful of others that make less than $1.5 million.
Who was the utility guy that Tony used to love who played second base?
Miguel Cairo?
No, he was his coach.
Oh, I thought.
I know. They signed him to the...
Yeah, the 3-year deal. They had
Garcia,
to have...
Was it Larry Garcia?
Larry Garcia.
Right. They ate more on his deal.
Right.
Eat money on his deal. This is $1 million.
They
won't
put
Aloy
on the injured list
right
to save 2 or 3 days worth of a roster spot.
And think of what's going on now this year. There was always that chance that Eloy and Mankata could be traded, right, in July if they had good first halves. So now there's no way they're going to get traded. So you have 3 players, 2 of them you're going to have to pay full salaries for, 3 players on the IL, full salaries plus the replacements right now. So you're paying those guys that came up from the minors to replace Robert, to replace Jimenez, to replace Mankata, and you're going to have to pay. So I think Jerry is really upset about this, and I think Grifol lasts the season for that reason. But, yeah,
so
look,
dumb.
They count. They count pennies around here. What can I say? His famous line from that symposium or whatever it was, like, if someone else pays a second baseman, do I really have to? You know, I'm paraphrasing. Yes, that's called the market. Yes, you have to pay the going rate if you want a good player. And so, yeah, that's and meanwhile, I mean, they're trying to get this new stadium. You saw the Sun-Times article today. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah.
Like, they want you to come and support the team. And if you come and support the team, we'll spend. Listen, how about the fans should feel that the team is doing everything humanly possible to put the best product
just
on a
try.
Field day in and day out?
Just try.
That is such a low bar to clear.
Try.
I heard you talk about the Royals, how they signed Witt, and they actually did more than that. And by the way, I picked the Royals to win this division. I'm saying that now because they're playing well. But they signed Witt and did all that stuff in advance of that vote there. Usually, if you are asking for a stadium, you got to do something on the field to excite the fans, to get them behind you. Who's behind Jerry in this request for public funds when you have a crappy team and a crappy future? So it's crazy. By the way, one more thing I didn't like what Getz said. He was asked about, you know, the losing and what Jerry thinks. And, you know, why was Getz hired? Because Jerry thought it'd be a quick fix, right?
Yeah.
That's what he said. He knows the organization. Well, get set it today. This is not going to be turned around overnight. Something we all knew.
Of course.
We all knew this. And yet Jerry did not realize that and you know, portrayed the idea of Getz knowing the organization as some benefit.
He knew it.
And, yeah, but he portrayed it differently. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I know we're the White Sox every time I'm up. But it is a moment here where they're worth conversation because...
Of course.
Jess, yeah, enjoy the milkshake out there.
Yeah, sure. A few more of those milkshakes you buy, maybe they could buy out Pedro Grifol and his hefty contract. I think Jesse got this.
Yeah.
But it was fine.
I think somebody over there just completely cut the line.
Yeah, even though
there is no line. Cut the line!
They climbed the cell tower, just like in Miami. All right, Aki's A-List coming up. What to watch for. Then we've got Sox baseball against Waddle's Reds tonight. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Waddle and Sylvie on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Chicago. Listen to us now live on the ESPN Chicago app. Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. Listen now on ESPN 1000. This is Waddle and Sylvie, ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, we'll get to Hockey's A-List here in a minute. I want to get to our buddy Chase on the South Side, who's been holding and wanted to talk some Bears with us.
Chase has been a fan of the Hall in the past, hasn't he? Hasn't Chase been one that wanted the Hall? I think.
I'm not sure. Chase on the South Side, you're on ESPN 1000. Were you a fan of the Hall?
No.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
Never was a fan of the Hall. Never was.
Okay.
Never was. So the reason why I was calling about that number nine pick, Waddle, I think I told you I disagree. I respect your opinion, but I highly disagree with you as far as wide receiver because what I would be in favor for the Bears to do is get an edge rusher more so than a receiver and trade back and maybe even get a three technique. And the only reason why I say that is because, you know, if you look at the Bears games, if you watch like the collapses they had this past season, was the biggest issue with this team was that they didn't have a pass rush. And you need a game record, you know, and you need more game records. And you can always get a receiver in the third round, fourth round, you know, but you need a guy who can wreck havoc on the game. You need a closer. I mean, we don't have enough closer on the defensive line. And that's what, if you look at that Super Bowl this past season, like with the Chiefs, Chris Jones was a game worker. He was the reason the Chiefs won that Super Bowl. So as much as I would love for the Bears to add more weaponry and get a receiver, a game-breaker receiver, I would rather them get an edge rusher or a three technique in the middle. And that's what I would prefer to
I can't hate it. You could definitely talk me into it for sure. I have an open mind with regard to what they do at nine. I want it to be somebody, and I think it will be, because of the circumstances, that can step in and be a difference maker immediately. So, yeah, I mean, if they get the best pass rusher available that fits their scheme, how in the world could I sit here and complain?
Yeah, you can't.
You can't. Because
especially
that guy
if he's good.
Yeah, that guy is going to miss. It's as important a position as you're going to have on the defensive side of the ball.
There's just a lot of people. You've seen the highlights from Odunze in big games make great catches where a lot of people think he's a can't-miss prospect.
Well, and also factor in the, you know, look, you're using the first overall pick of the draft on a quarterback,
right. And
you've already built a good infrastructure, but how about a few more layers of icing on that cake to make life even easier on the young quarterback? I think that there's a temptation to do that.
Right. And again, like, I still don't feel like you've got a wide receiving core built, and I don't think that you know what you're going to get from Keenan Allen and for how long.
That's a good point.
He's only signed for 1 year, so he could be a one-year stopgap.
Look, even if he comes back for a second year, there's a really good chance if you draft Roman Dunze, he's your three this year. He's your two next year as Keenan Allen swaps
and it's
importance.
Perfect.
And then
it's a perfect transition.
Exactly.
All right, let's get to Aki's A-List.
It's time for Aki's A-List. From the mind of the man who understands the four P's of Waddle's world, Aki's A-List. A-List. The top questions and topics floating around in Tyler Aki's mind.
Are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Aki's A-List. on ESPN Chicago.
That's right. Tyler's got questions. We'll provide answers. What are your questions today, Tyler?
All right. We'll start with a little football here. And Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders and ESPN put this article up today, talking about projecting the rookie quarterbacks in this class. Now, this is largely done on the metric of total defensive adjusted yards above replacement per attempt.
What the hell does that mean?
It's kind of like
DVOA.
Yeah, it has to do a little bit with like a little bit like WAR in baseball, but basically zero is a replacement level player and 1.5 is indicative of a Hall of Fame career. They ran 50,000 simulations of all of these guys' careers, and Caleb Williams in 21% of those simulations was elite, which basically puts him in the Hall of Fame. Upper tier in 24%, adequate starter in 25%, and a bust in 29%. Now, 29% may seem pretty high for a lot of people out there, but to put it into context, number two on this list is Drake May. He's a bust in 49%. Jaden Daniels in 37%. J.J. McCarthy in 46%. Bo Nix in 54%. And Michael Penix in 68%.
Too many numbers for Waddle.
Like, what is this? Like,
so what's your question?
My question is, do these numbers mean anything to you?
I don't know what they are. Like, when you say that Caleb Williams is most likely to be that Hall of Fame caliber quarterback based on the simulations as him as a Bear, or is him...
It's him as a Bear, yeah.
Well, how do we know Drake... What would Drake May's performance...
It's going off of their consensus spot on the big board. So Drake May's consensus big board spot is second. So he is
based
with Washington.
On being with Washington.
Yes.
So, there is some subjectivity to it because Caleb Williams will have a better infrastructure than some of the other guys. Right?
Yeah.
I got dizzy there for a second.
My eyes tell me that Caleb Williams has the best chance to be the better quarterback right now. Now, things always change. Just like Lamar Jackson's been the two-time MVP. He was last of the first round. Josh Allen was more of the project coming out of his school, and he's a great quarterback.
I think two things are really important here, talent, and I think there is a poo ton of talent there. And what he's walking into, the stability and the infrastructure of the situation, it points you towards good things. There's no guarantee, but it points you towards good things. So I'm not surprised that Caleb Williams in a Bears uniform is the most likely that projects to be the most positive marriage of all of this. I'm not surprised by that at all.
I'm telling you, the most convinced I ever was that a Bears quarterback was not going to fail was Cutler.
Yeah, so I agree with you.
He
was coming off of, what was it? How it was
4,600 yards
season.
At the age of 26.
Coming out of a system where he had been tutored by one of the best.
Yes. Like, he just rocket arm, great athleticism.
Yeah.
What was he drafted? 11th overall out of Vanderbilt?
I think so.
Best yet to come.
I'm with you.
With a great defense now, like he was.
I will say this. From that experience, I've learned to kind of just be more patient in the evaluation process, not to get too high or too low, and maybe give it a little extra time, whether it's Mitch or Justin, to come to a really firm conclusion. I think that's what we've learned. But this is as optimistic as I've been since the Cutler situation.
I've learned from that to not make so many excuses for the player.
That is a very good point as well. Because that player's entrusted with making everyone better. It's not just, hey, this is what I've raged against and shame on me for not realizing this years ago. It's the job of the most important player on your roster to make most other people around him better, not the other way around. And hopefully it'll work in a hand-in-hand fashion where this receiving core will help make Caleb Williams better. But there will come a point in time in his rookie season where it is incumbent upon Caleb Williams to make the guys in that offensive huddle better as well.
What were the what were the segments that they rated? So where would Cutler finish here? What were the? So he wasn't a bust. So
adequate starter, upper tier, or elite.
I think he was an adequate starter. He definitely wasn't an upper tier quarterback.
Nope.
And he wasn't elite.
The body of work was, there were moments, but the body of work would never have put him in anywhere other than what you just said.
All right, how about some baseball now?
By the way, I will say this as well. Those numbers, like you said, Tyler, they sound really low, but put it all into perspective. Like, what did you say? It was like a 21% chance that he would be elite?
About, 21%.
That's pretty high if you really look at it.
Basically, it's saying 21% he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, that's a very optimistic.
No one else has
projection.
A higher than 14% chance. Well, so he's like a little over. Well, like 1.5% or
one
and a half times.
Encouraging thing too. I know it's not exactly what you want to hear, but that has a 71% chance of him being at least adequate. You know, when you take all the other percentages.
Give me above
into
adequate.
Account.
So, what's the percent chance of being
upper tier? Or upper better tier is 45%.
Okay, so I got a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We shall see.
Some baseball now. The Chicago Cubs continue their road trip, and it's a daunting one, too. We saw the three-game set with the Padres. You got three with the Mariners and then three with the Arizona Diamondbacks, the reigning NL champions. How many wins is a successful road trip for the Cubs, knowing that you already have one?
Give me three. Win three out of the last six. They should have won two out of three in San Diego. That's the crappy part. They should have taken two out of three. They blew the 8-0 game. You can't get that one back. If you can go 3-3 in the last six, I'd take that. I'd love 4-2, but get me three out of the last six, and I'm happy. And then you come back at 4-6, right?
4-5.
4-5. I'd be happy with a West Coast swing of 4-5. After blowing one of those games?
I mean, the Mariners and the D-backs aren't playing great baseball right now, but they're good teams. So I would say, yeah. I mean, 500 on a West Coast trip, especially when you're getting nothing from Hendricks and your best pitcher's on the sideline.
Right, right. You're down two starters.
Yeah.
You don't feel the need like, maybe you got to chase one extra because you did blow that one against the Padres?
Well, like, you would love to get it, but it's already been lost. I mean, I always say go 500 on the road. So now looking at it in just a six-game scope, go 3-3 here.
All right. The Kentucky Wildcats officially hired Mark Pope from BYU as their head coach. That means no Billy Donovan to Kentucky. Is this a good thing for the Bulls?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Waddle. Yeah. It's what Waddle's saying. Like, there's not. I don't know why it's good. I mean, it hasn't been good. It stems higher than Billy. I don't even know if Billy's a good NBA coach. We didn't see in Oklahoma City if he was a good coach. We haven't seen with the Bulls if he's a good coach. Like, again, he is like right now, in my opinion, he's an average NBA coach.
I am so apathetic right now about that entire situation, including, I don't know who the F Billy is right now.
I know, but he hasn't done anything either to show you that he's
absolutely
a good coach. So it's not like it's been woe is Billy. Billy's had a chance to do some things too.
I don't believe that Billy has had a good or bad overall good or bad effect on this team.
Yeah,
I think this team is basically in cruise control as to who they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah.
Real quick, this one, Danny Zetterman brought this to our attention in the meeting earlier today. Allen Iverson had a statue unveiled of him at the Sixers practice facility today. Now, the statue is getting ridiculed because it looks more like a trophy as opposed to a statue because it is miniature in size. However, I ask you this, and that's standard for all of these guys that have their statues. Like, Barkley's out there. There's a bunch of players out
there. Like, the NBA in their Twitter handle showed you a line of all their statues. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Iverson got a small one compared to the others.
But I ask you this. Why are we putting statues at practice facilities instead of the actual arenas?
It shouldn't be. It should be appreciated by the fans. Can the fans go to their practice facility?
Not sure.
To see the statues.
Can
not
they?
Just, not to see practice.
I think so, because aren't they outside this? They're outside of the facility.
They are outside the facility.
Well, if you could go then fine.
But yes, it would make more sense outside of the arena.
Why are the statues miniature? I don't understand. And they should be at the arena. All statues should be at the arena.
Shouldn't all statues at minimum be life-size?
I think so.
Otherwise, it's a sculpture or a trophy.
It's an art project.
If, in fact, a statue is not a statue unless it is actual size.
Life-size.
Like you're turning this into the planet argument, like it's got to be this big to be considered a planet, like Pluto?
If that's what it takes.
It's a figurine, then.
Yes, there you go. That's a better description of it. It's not a true statue if it's not life-size. It's not a statue. Statues aren't small. Those are figurines. You're right.
Get your act together. I still feel bad for Scotty. He just got the face. Scotty just has the face inside. You have all the others. Michael's got the big statue outside. Stan Mikita's outside.
Why'd they do it that
Bobby
way?
Hull's outside. And then, like, Scotty just got the face.
What was the explanation
for that? I don't know. And then, like, there are reasons why Scotty is bitter. Scotty just got the face. In the meantime, like Jerry did build like statues for all the other White Sox players out in the outfield at Guaranteed Rate.
Are they life size?
I think so. Yeah.
That's
Frank
a statue.
And everybody, yeah.
I don't know how you can call a miniature sculpture a statue. It's not a statue.
Scotty just got the face.
Definition of a statue: a carved or cast figure of a person or animal, especially one that is
life
size or larger.
Thank you.
See?
It's not a statue.
It's good. All right. We've got a quick what to watch for next, and then Sox and Reds.
Yay.
The afternoon drive is easier with Waddle and Sylvie. Chill out. They're coming right back. ESPN Chicago.
Waddle and Sylvie, from our State Street studio to your hellish commute home. We're there with you, making it bearable. Never mind. Back to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago. Waddle and Sylvie get you set for your weekend viewing with What to Watch For.
What to Watch For, brought to you by Connie's Frozen Pizza. Get to know the true Chicago style with Connie's Frozen Pizza. Born in Chicago, enjoyed everywhere. Stop at your local grocer's freezer tonight. Call our 10. You get free pizza from Connie's right now. 332-3776. What are you watching for?
What I've been watching lately has been a show called The Gentlemen. It was suggested. Thank you, referred. That was the word, Mellor. It's Friday. I'm out. By Danny Zetterman. I've seen the first 2.5 episodes. I really like it.
What network?
It's called Netflix. Called The Gentlemen.
The Gentlemen.
Yes, it's very good.
This is right up my alley. It's the number one show currently on Netflix. It is called Unlocked, a Jail Experiment. It's an Arkansas jail, and the sheriff decides to unlock all the cells, and the guards go away, and they get
Chicago.
They
right?
get some freedom.
Right?
No, they're still in jail. They just don't have to stay in their cells, so they get to wander around and stuff. And it's all filmed. I don't know how real this is, but I love these prison these prison
shows. You're a
big
prison guy, that's for sure.
That's on Netflix. What do you guys have?
Going to the movies tonight, boys. Civil War is now in theaters, A24 film, and for my money, the best studio going. They do not make uninteresting movies. Civil War, starring Kirsten Dunst, her husband Jesse Plemons is in it, Nick Offerman. Cannot wait to check this out. A dystopian film by director Alex Garland. I can't wait to check it out tonight.
What do you got, Tyler?
I'll be locked in on the Masters this weekend. It looks like it's going to be a really good finish because all of the players seem to be pretty close in terms of where the leaderboard lies right now.
And don't forget a farewell to Vern on Sunday.
Indeed. Yes.
So good stuff there. Thank you today to Jesse Rogers, Wayne Randazzo, and also to Charles Davis. Good stuff today. And we'll be back Monday right at 2:30. We've got White Sox and Reds.
My guess is the Charles Davis conversation will be the highlight of our YouTube page.
Yes, go there. It's youtube.com/@Waddle and Sylvie for anything you missed, including what Waddle just suggested. Charles Davis breaking things down on Caleb Williams, his comps, what the Bears should do at 9. Thanks to Meller and thanks to Tyler. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a fantastic weekend.
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bump, 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 bump.
And thank you to all, and to all a good night.
I just want to say thank you all, and as always, f*** everybody else. I love y'all.